Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Sitting across from me is a young lady called Alexandra Potter. Good morning, Alexandra.
Hiya.
From what part of the world?
Clarecastle, County Clare.
Clarecastle in the County of Clare. And how old are you now?
I'm 17.
17 years old. But your story goes back to what age would you say you'd start thinking about things?
I suppose my earliest memory is probably when I was 12 in first year.
That's about right, I'd say. First year, what happened? Was there a change in your life and something changed? Or?
I suppose that was when I made my first connection with body image and weight and self-worth and self-confidence and things like that.
And what was the connection? I mean, you're there 12 years old, you're starting to become more, I suppose, adult in terms of thoughts. And
you've got a bigger access to different things in the world, media and the whole lot. I went shopping with my aunt, thing that I would do on a regular basis, you know, loved going shopping. And something that would never faze me from before, you know, I'd pick out clothes in a shop, go try them on, just saw a t-shirt, tried it on. And I remember just standing in the dressing room and thinking, God, that looks awful, I look horrific. And, you know, there was other girls walking in and out, and I can just remember comparing myself to them and thinking, they're slimmer, I'm fatter, things like that. And that would be my earliest, I suppose, my earliest memory of it, really.
Okay. And that's a pretty straightforward thing to think, and it wouldn't be that unusual, really.
No, not really. Not unusual at all. But, you know, it was more a thing, a build up of things in my life because, you know, I suppose I was more sensitive than I realised, and, you know, things that I thought didn't affect me subconsciously did.
Yes. Okay, so let's go from the trying on a t-shirt at the age of 12 to the next phase, when it started becoming problematic, if you like.
The next phase, well, it started more becoming problematic in first year.
Yeah.
I went into an all-girls school and I hated it.
Did you?
Hated it with a passion. A lot of bullying, you know, just the underlying hint that you weren't wanted around.
Mean girls stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that kind of stuff. You get it in most places, most all-girls schools. And I suppose just really the big stuff really then started to take its toll in third year.
And what is big stuff?
Big stuff would be, you know, bringing harm upon myself. You know, I can't even remember how I found out, but I can remember seeing that if you restrict your intake... Of food, you starve yourself, and then, you know, you vomit with anything that you do eat, you'll prevent putting on weight.
And you thought, that sounds like a pretty good idea?
Yeah.
Yeah, in your ignorance.
Exactly,
and I mean that respectfully.
Yeah.
You felt, let's go for this.
Yeah, I suppose I was already so deep in how I felt about myself at that point that I would think that's a perfectly okay thing to do.
So tell me how this works, because there'd be lots of mums and dads listening to this, and indeed girls your age listening who may have been through this, but plenty like myself who don't know how it works in practice. So you'd be about, 14, 15 at that point?
Yeah, I was 14.
14.
14, yeah.
We all sit down, we have dinner, and then what? You disappear. As far as we know, you're going to the loo or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know... a lot of the time you could starve yourself during the day, and because you've starved yourself, you're thinking, I'm so hungry. And instead of just eating a normal portion of food, you could completely overload.
Gobble it all
up. Yeah, exactly. Eat two or three amounts of what you should have ate.
Yeah.
And then those feelings of guilt is so strong that you feel like you need to make up for it in some way.
By purging yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
So you force the vomit. That's fingers down the throat stuff. Okay. And you're doing that in the bathroom at home. Is it every day, or is it
It started off maybe two or three times a week.
Yeah.
But by that Christmas, I was, you know, nearly getting sick. Anything I put in my mouth, it was coming back up in some form or another.
You were getting a satisfaction from it?
Yeah.
A high of some sort?
No, I would suppose, you know, just the feeling of relief after, because, you know, that feeling is so overwhelming. That feeling of guilt is so strong that, you know, you want to get rid of it. So you feel like, you know, by taking all this food out of your body, that you've somehow compensated for it. It's a control thing. It's a complete control thing. I mean, you feel like you can't control other aspects of your life. So, you know, school, things like that. You know, home life is great. Had very supportive parents, all that. Couldn't ask for a better upbringing. But, you know, something was still missing. And I suppose you feel like you need to control it. So if you can't control other aspects of your life, you know, you're controlling what you're putting into your body and what you're taking out.
So what was happening then in the non-bulimic world, if I could call it that, school-wise and so on? Were you still having a tough time?
I used to get a lot of bullying, really, for being active and liking sport. I love Gaelic football. My inspirations were always Bernard Brogan, Stephen Cluxton, massive Dublin supporter. And
you're from Clare.
I know, my dad's a Dub.
Oh, that's okay. At least you have some blood in you there.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
You know, but just the...
Why would you be slagged for liking
sport? I suppose
sport?
I was never into plastering myself in makeup or, you know, the fake tan. Never did it. I just kind of did my own thing. And I suppose I stuck out for that. You know, I wasn't on Facebook at the time. Wasn't on Snapchat, nothing like that. I just did my own thing, and I suppose they...
It's funny that you're considered freakish.
I was
going to say, freakish for being your own person.
I didn't drink, I didn't smoke.
You weren't doing any of that.
Yeah.
And yet you suffered for your...
And I didn't, you know, I didn't have a problem with people that did. I didn't really want to be a part of it. And I suppose they thought that was like, well, we'll put her back in her place.
And did they?
They did, yeah. They, you know, they made me feel worthless. You know, they really genuinely... grinded me down to nothing. Now, it wasn't all to do with bullying. I mean, usually things with eating disorders, it's a build-up of things that happen over your life. So when I first went to my first therapy session, they went all the way back to if I bonded well with my mother at birth, all the way up to the present day. And the thing they found was, because I moved primary schools as well due to bullying, and they found that it was more of a thing that I had no feelings of acceptance from others. Rejection. So that was...
And that followed you like a smell mm-hmm. all the way through your teens and into your teens.
Basically, in a nutshell.
So when you were doing all this, the bulimic activity, to call it that, and getting sick and everything, were you having a parallel universe? In other words, were you at home saying everything's fine, I'm just going to watch TV, do my homework, I'm not discussing it, and then going to the loo on your own? Very solitary road.
I suppose my parents had definitely picked up that, you know, maybe I wasn't happy in school.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was very good at hiding it. You know, I mean, I wasn't at home much. You know, I'd be in study or, you know, I might be home till 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. And I, you know, I was so deep in it at that point. I don't know. My sister found out. My sister was only 13 at the time. Maybe she's just a year younger than me. And she must have heard me or something. But she knew. She didn't even know what it was herself at the time. But she definitely thought something was odd. And she mentioned it to my parents. And my parents confronted me about it. But I don't know when I would have gave any signs of, you know, I'm inflicting this pain upon myself. It could have been a long time before that.
So was it a big sit down? Listen, we need to talk to you about this, Alexandra, and find out what's going on. Or was it just a casual washing the pots and saying it over the shoulder? Was it a showdown?
I think I remember. I can just remember very clearly. It was a Saturday night. They just came in from a night out, and it just all came out. Tears, everything, the whole lot. You know.
Who was crying?
Me, mostly me.
Saying what?
You know. I don't know even how it started. I don't even know where, you know, how to go from here. I don't know how deep I am in this, because I didn't, you know, up to that point, you know, I was trying to keep myself in control, cool, calm, but nothing of the sort.
And how did your folks react then when this
all
happening?
They were absolutely brilliant. They brought me to the doctor's Monday morning.
Yeah.
The doctor was very, you know, cool, calm, you know, we can get this sorted, you know, it's not a big issue. And then he transferred me onto a therapy clinic.
How did it feel being found out?
A sense of relief at the same time.
That's
because
yeah.
I suppose even things like maybe subconsciously I was leaving little hints hoping that maybe they would find out.
They cry for help.
Yeah, exactly.
Classic.
Yeah. And that was it really. You know, it was the feeling of at the same time I was worried, you know, God, what are people going to think of me? Is this going to look weird? Things like that. Again, feelings of acceptance, you know, wondering what everyone else is thinking.
Yeah.
I was such a, not a paranoid person, but before that I didn't care what other people thought of me. I'd gone from that stage to being, you know, watching what everyone was thinking about me.
Obviously the bulimia, they kind of tracked it down to find out what, mm-hmm. where it came from.
Yeah.
And it was about acceptance and rejection.
You know, rejection, everything like that, yeah.
And how do you fix bulimia? Do you know what I mean? Because is it psychological as much as
anything else? It's all psychological.
Okay, so you mentioned therapy earlier.
Yeah, it's all psychological.
So you did sessions with a therapist,
I did sessions with a therapist, but the clinic I went to, I mean, the woman I went to, she wasn't actually a counsellor, she was a social worker. And even though she was great to talk things through with me and get me, I used to go once a week, so talk about the things that went on.
She wasn't trained
in that area.
Which is what you needed, really.
Yeah, I needed someone that was specific with ways to treat anorexia and bulimia.
Tell me a bit of what happened in 2014 then.
2014.
Only a year ago, really.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the summer of, I did my junior cert.
Yeah.
Got through that somehow.
How'd you get on?
I did fine considering the pressure I was under. Yeah. I was very happy with my results.
Good.
I went on holidays. I remember things picked up there, and I went into TY and I joined a fitness centre.
Yeah.
Basically, just to get my fitness back up and running again, because, you know, I was on the Clare football team and I had stopped that because the fitness wasn't there. And I just started from scratch, really. But I suppose it was too good to be true that everything had just been fixed. You know, everything was grand after
the switch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not realistic.
No, not realistic at all. So it got to maybe March, April time of 2014, and I had published my article. I published an article for the Pell magazine, and it was on the Journal. And, you know, again, explaining my story, but I wasn't completely and utterly fixed of things. And I started working in a coffee shop in town. And again, you know, I wasn't anorexic, but I definitely went that way about it. Like, I'd cycle to work every day. Had to cycle to work, had to cycle home.
Why are you saying you had to?
That's the thing. It wasn't a thing of I had to. Like, I felt if I didn't do it, again, those feelings were very overpowering. I couldn't miss a session at the fitness centre. I had to go. I had to do it. I couldn't miss camogie training, couldn't miss football. I had to do it.
So kind of obsessive.
Oh, completely.
Slightly addictive. So again, you were kind of almost replacing. You often hear that with alcoholics who then become born again marathon runners. You know,
exactly.
You replace grief with exercise or whatever it might be. You seem to have replaced your bulimia or that outlet with one of fitness.
So. I suppose I still felt like I had to, you know, I wasn't happy with myself. You know, I still felt like I deserved these feelings of guilt and, you know.
Exactly. You sound like you were atoning for a crime that you didn't commit.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, things like, small things like, you know, birthday parties and stuff, I'd be thinking, God, should I go? Because there's going to be food there and, yeah, I might leave that time.
Tough existence.
Yeah, it's just an ongoing battle, and you get to the point where you're like, this is just not.
I'm looking at your face. You remind me so much of my own teenager, because just that sense where you get to a point, you just go, look, you're just getting on my nerves now.
Yeah.
And you, it sounds like you got to that with the illness.
Yeah.
You just went, it's not worth it.
I mean, in order to recover, you have to want to recover. I mean, I suppose you genuinely do feel that the condition, that's what they call it, the condition is your friend. You know, it's there for you. You feel like it's in the long run, it's better for you. You feel like, you know, in that moment, it's better for you. But, you know, you need to break that cycle. So in order to recover, you have to actually want to recover.
And when did that happen?
I went up to a clinic in Dublin and I went to a session. I went to a few sessions there and it was really, really good.
Good.
But the expense was just too much.
The travel or the
treatment? Travel and the treatment.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to get the train up, obviously. And that was, you know, I've got a family of five brothers and sisters and my mum and dad. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of expenses, yeah. And, you know, the train itself would be a 30-hour journey return.
Even
and then,
for your age, is it still?
Yeah.
It's expensive.
And, you know, then the session itself was €80 an hour.
All adds up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they wanted me to go once a week, but that was unrealistic. I tried to go there once a month.
But you found that they were talking your language.
Yeah, because the woman I was seeing, not only was she a counsellor and a psychologist, she had been through those experiences herself.
Ah, even better.
So even the care workers that I was going to, again, had gone through those experiences herself.
Yeah.
And they were definitely on the same page as you. But I had to stop going there. I just couldn't afford it. But I had enough tools and I had the foundations of things to bring myself forward, and I had a great support unit at home.
Yeah.
My sister's amazing. My mum and dad are great. My grandparents, everything. You know, I couldn't ask for a better support system. I'm lucky in that way.
It's so nice to talk to you today, because you strike me as the sort of person who would be kind of annoyed at yourself for succumbing to this stupid thing.
Really, like looking back on it, I'm thinking I could have done so much more in those two or three years.
You seem like rock solid. You're articulate. You're smart. You've got it all going on. And I can only imagine that you, looking back at it, you must be thinking, what in the name of God was I thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I missed out on a Clare Munster medal and then a final to play in. And it just, looking back on it, it's not worth it. None of it is.
But you were ill, so let's not be too defeatist about it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's what happened to you. And you came out the other side. Are you out the other side, or are you a nervous person now about it all?
I'm definitely in a better situation than what I was at the beginning. I've got a job. I would never have looked for a job or even handed in my CV.
It's all about the confidence, isn't it?
Completely confidence. I'm going to Lourdes on Friday. a youth helper over there. I'm doing my Leaving Cert next year, and you know, I'm looking forward to going ahead with life and looking forward. And I think the big thing is, like, you know, people would say to me, the care workers and the psychologists would say, you know, you have to stop the exercising, you can't do it, you just, you know, just eat normally, you know. But that wasn't going to help me, because okay, I could bring it down a notch or just be more consistent with it and not do these massive long runs or these periods of just, you know, starving and then running and then cardio and things like that. But sport was my outlet, and I liked running and I liked keeping healthy at the same time. So I just had to get the balance right.
And have you got it right now, do you think?
Yeah, I have. I think I have. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'd be very consistent with it and I'm thinking, I have to go today. I have to. And that's when you have to take the step back and say,
deep breath.
You know,
these
feelings will pass eventually. Yeah, just take a step back.
The world
will
turn.
Put things in perspective here. Yeah.
Okay. I've got to take a couple of texts, because I would like to ask you about, before I do that, I'd like to ask you, what would you say, because we're on holiday time now and lots of people listening are on, you know, secondary school holidays, as you know, and this could be somebody who's 14 or 15 sitting in the backseat of the car going, that's me. And I haven't told anyone.
Okay.
So what are you going to say to her?
I would say, you know, it's you need to tell someone. That's the big thing.
It's feel better that way.
Yeah, you feel. I mean, though, you subconsciously, you probably, the 9 times out of 10, you really genuinely want to tell someone. You know, you think you have it under control. You think you're fine. You think you're composed, and the chances are that child in the back of the car is breaking and just wants to explode. And I would also say, think to yourself, if I was recovered, you know, what way would I be? What would I want? What would I want out of life? And let them be your goals.
I'm thinking about what you were saying about the school and the mean girls and the fake tan and the...
Well, I've moved schools since.
I can imagine.
Yeah, and you know, that was, the school I'm in now is amazing.
Your
environment is a big thing.
What
environment you're in. I mean, even I used to think maybe it was just I wasn't clever at school. But just even my results this year, they've, you know, they're so much better. And just your environment's a big thing. And I have, you know, a solid group of friends that, you know, would, you know, my friend came with me up to Dublin today.
Yeah.
You know, they drop it for you. Like, they would do anything for
That's
you.
It's proper friendship.
You need people around you that make you feel good about yourself and that, you know.
People can be toxic in the wrong
environment. Yeah, exactly. You need someone, you need people that actually like you for you.
Yeah, and you found that now, which is tremendous. Because again, there's people in the back of the car who are in groups and they could be the ones doing the bullying or pushing. Mm-hmm. Or being mean, or they could be the ones like you who are sitting there going, actually, and so all through school days of my own, you know, to be an individual is not a bad thing. If you want to wear that, if you want to listen to that, if you want to go there, if you don't want to do that or smoke that or drink that, there's nothing wrong. Like, take control of your, if you can.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, the herd does not necessarily need to be joined.
You know, it's always harder to be the person that's, you know, that does their own thing. It's easy to be a sheep. That's the easy option.
Precisely.
But who wants to be the same as everyone else?
Boring old existence. Ryan, just listening to Alexandra speaking about her eating disorder, she has done so well, says Tracy. You know that I can completely relate to Alexandra. An eating disorder has ruined my life. Fair play to her. She sounds very confident. It's very hard to fix, quote unquote, an eating disorder. I can relate to that girl so much, says another. I was bullied badly through school and find it has affected me a lot into my 20s. I have friends and a loving family, yet I still regret that it happened. I think schools need to do a lot more to stop bullying, as I feel it has a greater impact on people than schools realise. And I'd hate if I ever had kids that they'd go through what I and lots of other kids go through and went through. Another says that you're an inspirational young lady, so take that too. And another says, any advice on how to approach somebody with this issue? In my case, a colleague. We're not very close, but I can see she's in that boat. The fact that we're not best friends makes it even more difficult, but it bothers me just to look away and ignore it. That's a sensitive person who's trying to know, do you approach or not approach?
I hate looking on and thinking, God, that person looks sick or there's something wrong or she's being bullied. I mean, definitely. I suppose if you're not close to it, it can be hard because people with eating disorders can be often very defensive and they're in denial. That is the main thing.
Okay.
They're in denial. You know, I'm fine. Everything's going grand. I mean, it's a tough one. I suppose maybe look for somebody that might be a little bit more closer. Maybe say, look, I have...
Oh, tell a friend at first. Yeah, that's good.
I think that there's something seriously going wrong here and maybe go from that approach. But the chances are they're going to be quite defensive about it. You could go up full on and just say, look, are you okay? But again, like you said, if you don't know them that well, they might actually take offence to it.
What do you want to do after school?
Oh God, what's
like
your dream?
What's the dream job?
What's the dream job? Well, I've, you know, I was hoping maybe nursing.
Yeah,
because
you'd be good at that.
Yeah, I like my mum's a nurse. And yeah, she loves it.
Because you seem quite a practical person.
Yeah, and I think I definitely want to go into maybe something with helping people, or maybe even social work or things like that.
I was thinking, as we've been talking, that if I was a teacher or a principal in a school, I'd love you to come and talk to the girls in fourth year.
Yeah, I've done a few.
Yeah, I think you'd be really good at that.
Yeah, I'm hoping maybe to go forward that angle. Maybe.
Yeah, I think you should.
Maybe, yeah.
Because you're very practical, but sensitive, and I think you'd understand. And if girls had questions and that kind of thing, they could.
There's myths out there that, you know, once you have an eating disorder, you always have an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And it's complete and utter rubbish.
Okay.
You'll always have maybe tendencies towards eating disorders. Like, I know when I get older that I have a very obsessive personality. If I like something, or, you know.
Lots of people have
that. If I get in my head, I will do it.
Lots of people have that.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm like tunnel vision. I'll do it. So I suppose, I mean, at the same time, that can be a good thing. But at the same time, I just have to be careful that I don't overdo something.
Yeah.
And, you know, just, you know, when I have a problem, or, you know, if I'm like, look, I'm actually struggling today. You know, I'm not feeling comfortable around food. Just tell somebody, because they'll get your mind off of it. And the feeling will pass eventually that, you know, you don't want to make yourself sick, or you don't want to starve yourself. It will go eventually. Who wants to do that? Like, you know.
Let's leave it at that, because it's such a good advice. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming in to see us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. Alexandra Potter has been our guest, talking about her story on the show this morning. We'll take a break.